Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I am Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And maybe we'll do this in one 60-minute thing.
Could happen.
It could happen today. We have no guests on the show, so if you're really looking forward to listening to a guest, change the channel.
Right.
Yeah, but...
We'll interview each other.
We will interview each other, but we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. It's an interesting thing to think about. So I got an article a few months ago that it's a guy that I follow on the Twitters or something. I signed up for his email list. He is kind of a personal development guru, but he talks a lot about things where how you can live on less money. And it's like that, and they're a dime a dozen, literally, life hacks of different ways that you can optimize your life, optimize your time. I am failing miserably at all of them.
Okay.
I just want to, like, with straight transparency, except for one. And the one thing is, it's an idea of how you can make your life seem like it lasts longer.
How do we do that?
So you do different things. So, and I was trying to put this into practice with some of the baseball practices that I was running, where, like...
You wanted them to feel longer?
No. You want to create memories. Because, like, if you can look back at the end of a season and you say, I have a memory of this and a memory of that, and there are all these unique things that add up to a season, it seems like the season took way longer than we took batting practice, we did our dailies and took batting practice, and everything was the same every day, and it's like Groundhog Day. And so some of the recommendations of this guy are take a different route to work than you normally do, take a different way home, which... In this town, really is probable because traffic sucks.
Right.
Let's just say that I'm late everywhere because I feel like I'm in the Truman Show and I'm just like, I keep banging into the walls of the set. Like, I can't get to Manchester because, 293 is one lane. I can't get anywhere in town because, 101 is it. It's 101. So
it's like our version of the Big Dig.
It's just a bunch of little digs
little
all over the place.
Spread out.
Really annoying. So anyway, there's that. Shop at a different grocery store and get ingredients you don't usually get. I don't do that because I have this thing when I make out the grocery list because I do the shopping. I will make the grocery list out for the Hannaford on Jenkins where I start left to right in the store and everything's
right.
In order.
According to your path.
Of the aisles of my path. Like, so that's optimized so that I can shop for the entire week in 20 minutes.
I do disagree with that recommendation to switch grocery stores because then you're just wasting time trying to find everything.
Well, then I'm backtracking like, all right, where's the coffee? Or more importantly, forget the coffee. And then you have a morning where like, all right, suddenly there's no coffee and you're like, all right, I guess my day's going to grind to a screeching halt at 6. So go for a walk before you have your breakfast. Don't always do that. Find a way to meet a new person every week. I don't think you have a problem with that. With kids and coaching, and I certainly don't either. It's just there are kind of the more you run, the more people you run into. Switch roles in your company or switch to a new job. Neither one of us has a problem with that where, you know, we're not constrained to going in office 9 to 5. For me, every day is different, which is a good thing and also a bad thing. And sometimes the fact that I don't have human interaction on a daily basis can get a little bit disturbing. Well, for like, I don't know, I'm... Maybe an introvert, maybe an extrovert. I really ambivert. I don't know. But the real challenge is sometimes you want human interaction and sometimes you interact with humans. And you're like, I'm all set. Like,
yes.
I'm good. So, you know, that's one thing. Remove TV news and social media from your daily routine or limit them to each to 5 minutes per day. That one I do like. Like TV for me is a passive thing where... And granted, I'm probably not optimizing my work by having TV on in the morning, but I'll have TV on in the morning and it kind of keeps me up to speed on what's going on in sports. But it also occasionally, all right, here's a 5 minute break because here's a really good story about something that I'm interested in. But a lot of the times it's kind of white noise until something, you hear something, it pops up. Social media, really one of the best things I've done this year, and I can say this 5 months into the year, is delete the Facebook app from my phone. Glorious. Like, day changer, life changer. Like, I'm on it when I want to see it, but I have to be on my computer to see it. But otherwise, I'm not, and I'm making the universal sign. I have my palm and my index finger is scrolling up. Like, otherwise, I'm sort of disconnected from that, which is glorious. And I deleted Twitter from my phone.
Okay.
also good.
You know, one of the staples on this program is at least once per show, you do some sort of gesture.
And I have to explain
that it. You have to describe.
Not made for radio.
But that plays right into what you're talking about, because every week it's different.
Well, I...
Pretty much.
Well, I hope. But the social media thing, like, that can really be a time suck where... And for me, because I probably have a really, I don't know, some sort of slight undiagnosed ADD, but... Like, the real time suck for me is I'll get onto the computer to do something for work. I'll log on to Facebook to check something for a client. There's this Facebook group called, I think it's Baseball 1857 through 1993. And these guys will, they're a bunch of, like, stat nerds. But they're fun, and there's a lot of remember this guy.
What, did they stop following the game at the strike?
Yeah, that's their demarcation line. Is
baseball ended?
Yeah, for them, baseball, I still... Baseball, to me, on the field, I think there are some things that are wrong with it that can really be improved. But I think as the ability of the players has only continued to improve over the years, and we'll talk about high school baseball in a little bit, and some of the stuff that you see now, you didn't see when I was playing. You certainly didn't see. It just didn't happen. But in thinking about just the overall changes, it really, if we're talking through removing social media from your world, you tend to, I lose time because I go, oh yeah, hey, I don't know, Tom Seaver. Yeah, was Tom Seaver really as good? And then the next thing I know, I'm on Baseball Reference and I scroll down and there's a similarity score. And I'm like, oh yeah, hey, he compares to, I don't know, Hoyt Wilhelm. That would make no sense because he's a reliever. Wilbur Wood. Oh, let's look at his stats. And like the Baseball Reference thing for me is the ultimate vortex of, like, you look up, okay, I have an hour to get things done before I have to go somewhere. And 15 minutes later, I'm still like, oh, yeah, Davey Lopes had a really good season in 1979.
Yeah.
So really useless. But it's that stuff can suck time away. And then there are a couple that are a little bit more invasive. But there are a lot of things you can do to change things up. For us, something that I realized I hadn't done in over a year, because I didn't do any district games last year. And I want to say, since I started working in baseball in 2003, there were some periods of time before I got back into doing this stuff, but this was one of the longest spells that I've gone without broadcasting a baseball game.
Right. Like, you've been busy coaching.
Busy coaching, and you have your coaching schedule. They play a lot on Mondays, so that blocked each other out. And so... we hadn't done a game, but yesterday we got to see the Bedford High team, and today being Friday, we got to see them in all their glory in an opening round game against Winnicunnett. And I feel like I gave it as a recap numerous times during the game, because you can never quite, if you're doing a game on radio, you have to assume, and sometimes it's the frustration of the listeners that have been with you the whole time, but you can never assume that your audience has been listening with you the entire time. It has to be part of a story where you're referencing something that happened earlier, and we kept referencing that first inning.
Right. Kind of a lot happened if you joined the party late.
Oh, God, it was great. It was great. So top of the first inning, Trevor Anibal gives up a pair of singles and is literally walking the tightrope. Like, he is behind 3-0 to Hayes Waddell, number three hitter for the Winnicunnett Warriors, and gets a called strike, which 3-0 might have been a little bit borderline, but with most umpires, the nature is, hey, we're going to give them the get me over on 3-0. Sure enough, Trevor gets the strike. 3-1 was down the heart. Waddell lets it go by. Full count pitch, Waddell lets it go by. Waddell's a left-handed batter. Trevor nibbles the outside corner, gets a called third strike, and suddenly one pitch and you're out of the inning. And that's what happened.
Yeah, generous description there, nibbling the outside corner.
He got a Maddox call.
Yeah, he got a Maddox call. He's just sort of glancing at the outside corner as it went into the catcher's mitt, Kyle Levine's mitt.
It did go by. However, it was a strike. The next pitch later, the batter Hunter Chase grounded into a double play, and that ended that Winnicunnett threat. And then
Those two pitches went from two on, potentially bases loaded, nobody out, to out of the inning.
I'm out of the inning. Like, I'm good. And then two outs in the bottom of the first, Anibal singles sharply down the left field line, followed by walk and walk. And Avery Masso comes up, counts 2-0 on him. And the starter from Winnicott was really having a hard time finding it at that point. And 2-0, you and I talked about it yesterday on the broadcast. If I'm a hitter, I don't want 3-0 because chances are the bat's on my shoulder. 3-1, if I swing a miss, now I got two strikes on me, even though it's still a nice situation to be in, it's not 2-0. 2-0 is like the road is rolling out in front of you. You do with it as you may. And then the bases are loaded. So what does Maso get? He gets a fastball right down the heart of the plate and promptly returns it over the right center field fence at the SAU field. And Bedford all of a sudden goes from being one batter from being tied nothing-nothing, or, I mean, you can go even further back. They could have been down in the game. All of a sudden, they're up 4-0. And it really changed the tenor of a game from this is going to be a nail-biter, which we thought it was going to be based on the regular season game against Winnicott a week before. It went from that to this kind of feels like it's going to be a blowout.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how we got to that 2-0 count for Avery, because the first pitch he took, I was starting to recognize, wow, he looks really comfortable in the plate. He's standing tall, not a lot of movement as he took that pitch. And then the second pitch, if you remember, was a fastball up and in, and it backed Avery Maso off the plate a little bit. And I really think that's important. You know, a lot of times you get backed off the plate, it just sort of, you know, you get anxious for a second because you think the ball might hit you. But then because you're moving around and it doesn't hit you, you start to relax a little bit. And then sure enough, he's relaxed on that 2-0 count, and he got exactly the pitch he was looking for, that fastball right down the middle, and he put a perfect swing on it. And it was fun to have that view that we did behind the catcher because it just was a beautiful thing, exactly what you're looking for, and he did not miss.
Yeah, we saw that. It was right off the bat. It was no doubt. I haven't listened to the call. I think I got the call. But stuff like that is fun. And then you made a comment about Avery and his grand slam later. After he came back to grab a foul ball,
right.
He kind of looked, you gave the smile in the wink. But I like these kids are enjoying it. And you then at that point, Trevor really settled in nicely. The Bulldogs in six innings turned what, three double plays, if I'm not mistaken. So he was using one pitch to get two outs on three occasions. Giuliano did a great job at shortstop yesterday. He and Crowley are a nice pair up the middle, and they've obviously gotten ample opportunity to do that when Trevor's been on the mound. But defensively, the one that I was most impressed with that I hadn't seen at all this year was Kyle behind the plate. Kyle Levine is slick behind the plate. He's quiet, and I'm not talking vocally. I'm talking he just doesn't move. And when you're a catcher, that's tough to do, particularly you're receiving a guy like Trevor who's throwing in the mid to high 80s. And Trevor does hit his spots very well, but Kyle does a really good job of subtly framing pitches. You see it a lot in high school. You certainly see it a lot as kids are kind of getting little league older into the full diamond where the pitch will be outside and the kid really tries to oversell it. And it really is an art to frame a pitch. And Kyle does it extremely well. The other thing that I was impressed with, and we joked about it, was the Tony Pena, where he is firmly on his hindquarters in some sort of yoga pose and is receiving the ball low. But if you're a hitter, that's next to an unhittable pitch. But if Kyle doesn't have to move to catch it, and he doesn't, all of a sudden it looks to the umpire like, wow, kid's hitting his targets, give me a strike. And if you are a big catcher, and there aren't a ton of giant catchers, if you're a big catcher, that's a perfect way to set up that low target.
Yeah, they really worked well together, and you could see they have that chemistry. They've worked a lot of innings together this year, and as we talked about on the broadcast, Trevor Anibal had 44 innings pitched this season coming into the game, leading the staff, and 86 strikeouts. With an ERA of 1.59, he's had an outstanding game, an outstanding season on the hill. And after that early hiccup in the first, getting those two first batters on base, he really settled down and had another excellent outing against Winnicott, another two-hit shutout. So that propels Bedford into the quarterfinals tomorrow against BG.
Yeah, so they'll play BG tomorrow. As you and I discussed walking into the studio, they beat BG 13-3. Michael Pratt was the guy on the hill for the Bulldogs in that one. Curious to see what direction Billy goes with a starter tomorrow. He certainly has the arms, and it's a season in which things have changed for him a bit. I think heading in, he really thought that Zach Fletcher was going to get a lot of innings. He thought that Maso was going to get a lot of innings as well. Neither one of them, I think between the two of them, they've combined for 6 2/3 innings, give or take. So neither of them has really done a whole lot on the mound. They just they haven't been in there just because of one thing or another. But you look at what Blake Murray has done to really pick up a lot of the slack. Blake's thrown the better part of 30 innings, an ERA around 3.5. And it has been fun to see the team started out 1-4 and has now won 12 of their last 14 and is really playing some good baseball. And at a time that, yeah, it really is challenging to put everything together, particularly when you've been beset by some injuries to the pitching staff. But Billy's been able to do it. He's done a really wonderful job with this team. I love hearing the chatter out of the dugout. It is, and Ben Stewart, who's up on varsity now as a freshman for the playoffs. We were talking to Ben on our way out, and he said, "Hey, fun times being up there." He said, "Man, the dugout is so much fun. Like, that's what you want. It's supposed to be a good place. This is a game. Have fun. Play baseball."
Yeah, and the fun thing yesterday was to see all the production up and down the lineup. You know, the things that jumped out were those three home runs, which came from the number two hitter, Fletcher, number four hitter, Nykum, and number six hitter, Mossow. And what a time of year to start really ramping up your power. The team only hit 9 home runs in the regular season and then hit 3 yesterday. But then just 1 through 6, they got on base twice. So 1 through 6 all got on base at least twice. And that is a tough 1 through 6 to try to deal with.
It makes a big difference, too, for you when you're a pitcher, if you have to work out of the stretch. And Joe Allen, who was the reliever for Winnicunnett, was working out of the stretch the vast majority of the time, if not the entire time. But if you're a pitcher who's not comfortable working out of the stretch or have to think about runners, and we saw it at one point, Joe Allen had Michael Pratt on first base and was just fixated on Pratt.
Must have thrown over 6 or 7 times.
He threw over 4 times consecutively. He threw over a couple times. And then even in spite of all that, Pratt still broke on one that was fouled off by Fletcher during his at-bat. So it was fun to watch that little chess match, and the Bulldogs came away with that 10-0 win. Trevor threw, according to Game Changer, Trevor threw 82 pitches.
And only gave up 2 hits.
And gave up 2 hits. According to mine, he threw 79. So, but anyway you slice it, he's down for 3 days, so that would mean Friday, Saturday, Sunday. His earliest available day would be Monday. And so the Bulldogs on Saturday at 4:00 at Holman Stadium against BG will go with somebody else. But Trevor will be nice and ready to take the ball again, assuming that the Bulldogs get another round deeper into the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. So, he'll be ready next week for the semis.
And the other thing that's nice about the playoffs as it went, the road for the Bulldogs got a little bit easier too, and not something that you would have expected. Exeter, the number 2 team coming in, the number 2 seed. So, I mean, this is like a University of Arizona losing to Santa Clara thing. Exeter loses to the 15 Dover, which I guess sounds familiar if you're fans of Bedford basketball. That happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, we're accustomed now to Dover making a surprise playoff run.
It's yeah. Well, there were a number.
Unfortunately,
there were a number of themes that recurred. Dover somehow found a way to get it done yesterday against Exeter, and the game was tied at 2 through 7 innings, and Dover put up a 5 spot in the 8th, and Exeter went down quietly, and that was the end of the ball game. So Dover is done, or check that, Exeter is done, and
that's the team that Bedford could have met in the semis.
That's a big change. So you have them, but then you also had Keene coming in, and Keene, also a high seed, got knocked out 2-1 by the Clippers of Portsmouth. So it's funny. You and I have done enough games of Bedford teams facing other teams that some of these, like, you have bad memories of. Like, I think about Portsmouth-Bedford girls basketball playoffs last year, Dover-Bedford. You know, there's that. There's the BG games where the girls basketball side, how Bedford will have an opportunity. BG is tough to topple. And so, like, there are these little mini rivalries among other sports that aren't played between chalk lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to see that with girls lacrosse.
Yep.
I don't know if we're ready to turn the page in that direction yet.
Let's do it. Well, you were at that game.
Right.
Like,
so we did the
newly minted lacrosse expert.
Yeah, right. Thanks to Corey Munster Tigers counseling. But it was Wednesday. Was it Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday was the quarterfinal for the girls lacrosse. And Bedford, with one loss as the two seed, hosted Exeter, and they were able to win 15-10. And the reason I mentioned BG is because Bedford is going to play BG in the semifinals this Saturday. So tomorrow, we're taping this on Friday, down in Exeter. So while the Bedford girls lacrosse team is playing BG, the baseball teams will be playing. So the reason I brought it up is because of that rivalry you mentioned.
Right. And it seems like those two always lock horns at some point. For the lacrosse novice, because I joked about it yesterday, but I was only half joking, and we should have actually had Corey on the air for this, for the lacrosse novice, because I was doing fake play-by-play lacrosse, and it was she passes the ball to somebody else, and she catches it in the net at the end of the stick and spins and passes it to somebody else with the net at the end of the stick, and then they shoot it into the goal past the goalie. Like, help me understand just a handful of terms, because I really have no idea what I'm talking about. In fact, I feel like you remember the Boom Goes the Dynamite video?
Not really.
Oh, you don't. It's where it was at Ball State University, and it was a student broadcast, and they had a kid get into the broadcast, and it really appears that he got into the broadcast about as last minute as he possibly could have been and was behind the ticker the entire time, but at one point, he is stumbling over some Pacers highlights, Indiana Pacers highlights.
Uh-huh.
And there's a line in there about Reggie Miller's looking good, passes it to the man, and boom goes the Dynamite. And that was the money line. It's amazing. It was one of the first viral internet videos, but it's always my fear that I'm going to get in front of, behind a mic and turn into the Boom Goes the Dynamite guy, which is precisely what I would do for lacrosse. What tips would you have for somebody to avoid that?
Broadcasting lacrosse?
Yes. Well, no, to avoid the difficulty.
Well, you just have to study tape of any broadcast that Corey Munster Tiger does, and then that's how you learn all the terminology.
Fair enough.
Now, one of the plays in girls lacrosse that's different, girls lacrosse and boys lacrosse have different rules, but one of the plays that comes up a lot that's a little bit unique is called shooting space violation, where you'll see generally man-to-man defense, and then if you get past your defender in girls lacrosse and you're entering the fan, which is really the scoring area,
okay,
then another defender is really not allowed to come play help defense and get in between the shooter and the goalie. It's called a shooting space violation.
Okay.
And if that happens, then you get basically what's the equivalent of a penalty shot in soccer. You get to restart the game from the top of the fan, which is 8 meters away, and all the other players have to be on the fan extended. And so you basically have the opportunity to take a couple steps in and have a one-on-one shot against the goalie. So this penalty that's called, the shooting space violation, is very important, because when it's called, you then have this 8-meter free position shot.
Is the shooting space violation common?
Yes.
Really?
Okay. Yes, very common. Because all you have to do as a...
Like, I've watched lacrosse highlights on the ESPN, and that's it.
Well, again, it's different for boys and girls. But for the girls, to give you an example, in this game against Exeter scored 10 goals, and I think at least 3 of them were on 8-meter shots. Now, not all of the 8-meter shots come after a shooting space violation. If there's a rough check in the fan area, then you'll get the 8-meter free position. So it's not just from that infraction, but it does happen a lot. And what's unique about it is that it's just different from other sports where, like in basketball, you're taught to come play help side defense. And if one player gets beat off the dribble, the help defender is supposed to come and block the basket.
Right, that's the
idea.
And
pick up the slack.
Yeah.
But in girls lacrosse, you can't do that. So it really puts a premium on individual one-on-one defense.
And lateral movement.
And lateral movement, and making sure your player doesn't beat you.
So, okay, that is certainly a challenge. And then the penalty for that is, I guess, I'm sure that they keep stats on the percentage of times that somebody makes their free shot out of that.
Is a high percentage. I didn't get a chance to ask Corey if he knew what the overall, in general, scoring percentage was on that play.
What's the play call again?
Well, it's an 8-meter free position. I would, just from the games that I've seen, I would say it's probably at least, you know, 65%, 2 out of 3, because, you know, even though you have a shot at the goalie more or less one-on-one, you've got defenders, once the play starts, coming in with their sticks out to try to distract you, and then you might go for the corner and you might just miss, or you might hit the pipe, which right. happened a number of times in the quarterfinal game. So it's not a slam dunk. It's probably a lower percentage than penalty shot in soccer, but I would guess at least 2 out of 3.
So what I've learned from quick Googling and going to creaseroll.com, first, it helps to understand some statistical facts about goalkeeper save percentages. Stopping a small lacrosse ball traveling very fast at close range is not an easy thing for a goalkeeper to do. A really good goalkeeper only saves a little better than 50% of all shots on goal, so a free position shot should be in the shooter's favor. Conversely, getting a shot past the goalkeeper is also not an easy thing to do, considering the goalkeeper's body and her oversized pocket is blocking at least one-third or more of the cage opening. This varies significantly, of course, by the size, posture, and location of the goalkeeper. But generally keeping both the shooter and the goaltender square off, with the shooter having a slight advantage, the point here is that the shooter should recognize and be confident with her advantage, but also needs to be calculated and purposeful. So I think your guess is about right. It's interesting. That is basically a power forward shooting percentage in the NBA, give or take, that 60 to 70% range. But it would be like if all of a sudden a free throw was worth 8 points.
Yeah.
Where it's like the MTV Rock and Jock basketball challenge where you have that 8 ball, you know, right inside the half court. Right? I'm just going to shoot from there. But that really does change the game. And the fact that those games have scores, 15 to 10, whatnot, if 30% of your points are coming from that, it really behooves you to have defenders that aren't committing that shooting space violation. And it seems to me, and as a complete lacrosse novice, that would be sort of the area to exploit a little bit if you find that weakness among a team. Because I know if I were to go out there and play right now, that would be, I'd be whistled for that constantly, because that's just, after years of playing basketball, it's, okay, I'm going to leave my guy to go to the other guy. Well, now all of a sudden, that could potentially really set my team back.
Yeah, I mean, that's the natural reaction. And so you obviously have to be taught to act differently. And, you know, one thing I've been thinking about as I've been paying more attention to lacrosse and the rules, the strategies, and the opportunities to try and get an edge on your opponent, is it starting to make more sense to me with Bill Belichick's background. You know, he played lacrosse, and I have a feeling that he took a lot of the principles of lacrosse and applied them to coaching the Patriots. And the reason I say that is because you look at some of the things that Bill Belichick does. He always tries to get a left-footed punter, right? So he's trying to gain an advantage on special teams anytime he can with something unique. So
would you say the left-handed, left-footed punter has the advantage because it's different, for the same reason that the tendency on defense in basketball is to guard somebody to go to the right? We referred to it a number of times this year with Trey Ravenel and last year with Nick Mokas, that teams will overplay somebody to the right and not realizing the kid's left-handed, and all of a sudden, yeah, he's blown by him with the left hand. Would you guess that that's the same reason?
That's a perfect example. I actually wasn't even thinking about that, but you're right. The defender who sort of forgets that in the heat of the moment and goes to block the kick and goes after the right foot, maybe he runs into the kicker and you get a flag and the Patriots are able to keep possession of the ball, and that can change a game, can change a season. So certainly on that end of the play, it could make a difference. But really what I've heard is that it's on the other end of the play where the left-footed kicker, the way that the ball is moving through the air is different for the receiver, the punt returner.
Yes,
and maybe it causes him to cough it up once. So maybe one extra fumble per year can change the tenor of that game, and maybe that gets you home field advantage. I mean, these little things, you know, Belichick is looking for any edge he can get, and so it's that type of thing that he's doing on special teams in football. Another one is with the turnovers. I mean, we've all seen for years how Belichick put such a premium on ball security. And if he gets a running back who fumbles, you know, he may never play again. He just won't allow it. You cannot turn the ball over. And in lacrosse, you see that because possession is so important. Once the team gets the ball into the offensive zone, the scoring percentage is pretty significant. You know, I don't have the stats, but you'll see it time and time again. The key is just getting the ball into the offensive zone, and then the scoring comes from there. And so turnovers in the transition game in lacrosse are very important. And then you back it up a step, the draw or the face-off at midfield after every goal. And again, I think that lacrosse coaches put a premium on getting a player in that draw who's going to win possession, because you can't score without the ball. And as Corey has described it, it can get to be almost make it take it. If you have someone taking that draw who's adept at securing possession, you can get in a real rhythm where you can just score, get possession off the draw, score, get possession off the draw, score. And you can either make a comeback quickly or, you know, break open a game and extend your lead. And so that's just what I've been thinking about when I start to analyze lacrosse, is thinking about Bill Belichick and the value of possession and avoiding turnovers.
It's like lacrosse meets Moneyball.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't follow it closely enough to be able to tell you anything about any advanced analytics or anything like that, but it really does seem to me that capitalizing on the little things that turn out to be big things can really swing a game in your favor very quickly. So now I'm curious where, okay, so I know you were talking about the schedule. They're in the semis. Where is that?
I believe it's at Exeter. So it's a...
I'm not driving that far.
Yeah, it's a neutral site game.
Okay.
But we're covering on the radio, so okay. You can listen on the radio.
Awesome.
Harry and Corey will have the call.
Yep.
But just to give some stats from the quarterfinal game, Hannah McCarthy led the scoring attack for the Bulldogs with 6. And just last week, Hannah McCarthy became the all-time leading goal scorer in New Hampshire girls lacrosse. So she's had a phenomenal career. She's a senior, and she led the way with 6 in the quarterfinal matchup. Right behind her was Sydney Lynch with 5.
Wow.
And both of those girls were first-team All-State last year, so they've continued with their excellence. And then Mackenzie McEachern had 2. She was second-team All-State last year, and you and I saw her.
I was going to say, that's really no surprise given how fast she is.
Well, yeah, and I'm not surprised that you mentioned that. We talked about it on the broadcast. She really used speed to her advantage in lacrosse as well, because she wasn't the one taking the draw. But once that ball goes up in the air, you've got these midfielders from either side trying to gain possession of it. And there were at least 3 times where she was the one who swooped in with her speed, picked up the loose ball, got possession for Bedford, and then allowed them to go down and score. So she only scored 2 goals, but she made a big impact on the game getting the loose balls. And one of the goals she made was an end-to-end rush where she just ran by everybody on the field and got the defender turning as she was sort of zigzagging. And it was just fun to watch her use her speed like we've seen her use in soccer. And then the other goals in the quarterfinal game came from Chamberlain Bell as well as Courtney Dermody. So nice varied attack as they put up 15.
Well, and getting back to McKenzie too, she's small.
Right.
And so a player like that with a game like that, being smaller, having speed, and the cutting ability that we've seen in soccer, like those 3 things really can set you apart in soccer, but can also set you apart in lacrosse, given what we're talking about. It's like the old Gerard Dyson. That's what speed do.
Right.
You see it in youth sports. It's the kids that can really motor and can get from point A to point B. They have an advantage, and they almost tend to get a little bit undervalued where somebody, particularly if it's a ball sport, those kids will tend to get undervalued because somebody looks at it and says, well, they're not bigger, they're not stronger, and speed doesn't always show up in a tryout. But if you can get fast kids, and even in baseball, if you can get fast kids that can just find their way on base and are confident and can wreak havoc with their speed, it's really a wonderful weapon to have.
Yeah, it's a skill that really pays off. So the girls are going to go up later today against BG. They beat them 14-13 in the regular season on the road. So rematch of a close game. Good luck to the Bulldogs.
So it will be fun to watch that as things continue for the Bedford Bulldog girls lacrosse team, and impressive to see what they've done so far. And Corey actually also sent us over some information too. It's nice to get the updates and be thought of from
Corey Parker.
Parker, of course. The boys and girls tennis teams both captured state titles. So this is the 10th straight for the boys. Seriously.
That is really impressive.
It's crazy.
Bravo.
Yeah. There's nothing else to say other than great job. Coach Shauna Morley, who teaches PE over at Green Acres Elementary in Manch. Fun one to talk to. She doesn't play tennis herself anymore. We should actually have her on the show. She's a good one. Runs a very good program, and really takes pride in what she does, takes pride in what the team has been able to accomplish. So congratulations, coach. Congratulations, team. And the girls team has now won 3 of their last 4. So very impressive for them as well. And Corey's sideline in that is to be filed under All I Do Is Win. Jared Steinberg, a senior. All he does is win.
That's right. Good luck, Charm.
Yeah. 8 state titles, 4 in golf, 4 in tennis.
That's outstanding.
It would be fun. It'd just be fun being a part of that, regardless of the role that you play on the team. Hey, being a part of the team that brings home the hardware every year, wherever he goes and whatever his next level of athletics will be, it's a safe bet it's going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, right. It's going to be tough to match that going forward.
Unless he winds up going to that school that we were talking about. Was that in Minnesota?
Right.
Yeah.
D3.
St. John's. I say it with
St. Thomas.
St. Thomas, yeah. That is now being relegated to a higher division, if that's even possible.
Some other conference.
Yeah. Another conference where people will recruit better, but that's beside the point. So congratulations, Jared. 8 seasons, 8 titles. We already talked about girls lacrosse beating Exeter, and then track has a handful of kids competing in the Meet of Champions. That is this weekend as well. So we'll take a look at some of the ones from Bedford who are in the girls 100 meter dash, Taryn Naftali among them, as well as Carly Rinko and Abby Goulis in the 1600 meter run, running for the Bulldogs as well. And I would be remiss too in not mentioning the Rosse Lurgio track team, which just won their state meet as well. And certainly a lot of fun there. You turn on Facebook this morning in the brief moment that I was on there, and actually I was getting random texts from people too with, hey, check it out. So-and-so won this, so-and-so won. Like, we knew she was fast. I didn't know she was that fast. So, hey, it's a lot of fun as we sort of make our slow march toward the end of the school year, which if you're my kids, it can't get here fast enough. Dad, I don't want to think about summer. It's too far away. I don't know. So good going to the Bedford sports programs that are taking place. The Little League season is reaching its terminus, and that'll bring us into All-Star season. So we'll get down to that at some point. And as far as the professional side, there is, do you want to start with the NBA or do you want to start with the NHL?
You pick.
I'm going to go with the most impressive thing I've seen in the last couple weeks, and that is Torrey Krug losing his helmet and then going straight Craig McTavish all over everybody. Helmetless, without regard for life, limb, or the thing that is contained within your skull.
Yeah, that was quite a hit. I think he was,
awesome.
A little bit upset at how he was treated in front of Tuukka Rask as he was sort of corralled and pushed towards the ice and held and elbowed. So you're right, he kind of got up with a vengeance and went looking for retaliation, and
oh, he found
ended
it.
Up putting up a clean hit on that unfortunate blue,
right,
who started suffering the blues after that hit in game one.
And I can never, you see it sometimes happen in football where an offensive lineman will lose his helmet and the quarterback throws a pick and the offensive lineman who's lost his helmet makes the tackle on the play.
Yeah, because he kept playing.
He was not fooling.
No.
And he didn't.
Even after the hit.
Right. He was rocking and rolling. I'm surprised they didn't blow it dead, but it gave us a great highlight, and his hair is good.
Right. Apparently he'd just gotten a haircut.
Again, he mentioned that in the postgame. I'm not going to pretend, I do like the Bruins. Unfortunately, there are a lot of things that I wish I watched because I just can't sit there in front of the TV at all hours. The Bruins are one, and I wish that I spent more time watching the Bruins because it is enjoyable. I'm not going to go bandwagon. I will tell you that I'm rooting for them, but certainly it's I'm not going to act like I've been here all along and bust out all my spoked B stuff that I don't own.
No, I'm the same way. I just can't watch hockey throughout most of the season because I'm watching so much basketball. But with them in the finals...
If there were two of you, perhaps.
Right. I have been able to watch them, and the schedules really work out well. I think the NBA and the NHL coordinate on this so that you only get one championship game per night. So you got the Stanley Cup
great.
Wednesday, basketball Thursday, then hockey Saturday, basketball Sunday. So they alternate it, and it's really smart of them to do that. But, you know, because they've made it to the Stanley Cup, I've had a chance to watch both of the first two games, and it has been fun. And, you know, game one was a little bit more fun to watch than game two. That was really impressive how they came back from that 2-0 deficit and just ripped off four in a row. But the Blues came out and really kind of slowed the game down a little bit in game two. I mean, it was a fast first period with both teams scoring twice, and it felt a little bit more wide open. But after that, it was more of a physical possession game, not as much happening. I think it was more what the Blues wanted to accomplish, and they did what they needed to do, was come into Boston and get at least one.
Yep. So, and it will complicate things a bit for the Bruins, but I don't think, first of all, I don't think anybody thought that this one was going to be a straight sweep anyway. And second of all, for all the hockey fans that are here, you get more hockey now.
Right.
Like,
which is a good thing.
Which you want. And it has been entertaining TV. I will say that. The other thing that I consistently forget to watch, and this is from a guy, by the way, a few years ago, I did have the NHL package, the NHL streaming package, and I watched a ton of hockey. But I think I was at a different phase in my life when my kids had earlier bedtimes.
Yeah.
And it made it much easier. Now there's just way too much stuff going on in the house way too late, which really cuts into things. And seeing that Jeopardy, I think, is on what, at 7:30?
It is.
Yeah, I'm zero for Jeopardy.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. I still have not seen it.
He's up to 31 in a row. He's just shy of 2.5 million in winnings. So within another show or two, he's going to break Ken Jennings' record. And, you know, you're missing out on some good stuff. There was actually a category earlier in the week that was Dodgers baseball.
Really?
Yeah. And it was, you know, a fun collection of questions. I'm trying to remember. So one
Hang
of them
on.
Was
Dodgers baseball Jeopardy.
Yeah, you would have gotten them. I mean, because I was able to get all five, which means that you certainly would have
it's
been able to get all five.
It's time for Dodger baseball. Look at this.
Are you already finding the questions that came up?
No, it's all video, and that doesn't help me. I need a transcript.
Yeah, so the questions were this Mexican pitcher as a rookie.
Who is Fernando Valenzuela?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That didn't take long.
Yep.
This former basketball player is now part of the ownership group.
Who is Magic Johnson.
Right, that didn't take long. This group of four players in the 70s played together.
Who are Garvey, Lopes, Russell, and Say?
Well, what group are they? It's even simpler than that.
The infield?
Exactly. Yeah. The question was, right. What is the infield?
Yeah.
Man, what were the other two questions?
Oral Hershiser?
No.
Sandy Koufax?
I think I was just going backwards in how I, you know, from a 1,000 up to 200. So they got even easier as you went backwards. But those were three of them, and I think James may have gotten, he may have swept that category.
They said he did not sweep that category.
Oh, really?
No. I don't know how that would have been possible, but he did not sweep that category.
Yeah, well, I think he knew them all because they were pretty easy.
Well, there was also one that came on, and he tweeted about it yesterday. This one was, the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series over this team that was later found to have lost intentionally.
Right.
And he says...
That's the White Sox scandal.
That was
White
Black Sox scandal. And he says, I'm glad James Holzhauer allowed someone else to answer this Jeopardy question about the 1919 World Series last night. Unfair advantage being a professional sports gambler. To which Holzhauer says, Chick Gandil tipped me off about the fix. I made a killing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, like, you got to bust out a random White Sox player. And by the way, now he has a verified account.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Phew.
Yeah. Was worried. No, I do have to watch this category because I guarantee you I would run it.
Yeah, you would.
That would have been my only chance. It would have been like the Cliff Clavin episode of Jeopardy, which the final, who are three people who have not been in my kitchen. Yeah, but It was. You've seen that one on Cheers?
I don't remember that episode.
Oh my God!
I do know Cliff Clavin though.
No, it's all the categories are handmade for Cliff Clavin. Like okay. People who live with their mother, U.S. Postal Service. Like they're all his categories.
Right.
And the other two people are just staring at themselves, and he's just running the board.
Nice.
And then the final Jeopardy question. I think he bets everything and loses. It's really good. So yeah. So Jeopardy James, and then roll. But and I guess the other thing that, because I'm sure people are sitting there going, well, this isn't a sports story, but it is a sports story because first of all, it's Jeopardy toes the line between sports and entertainment. There's something sportish, but this guy's background of gambler and trivia, yes, now it's sports because of him.
Right.
And I don't know how they keep making categories for him. Like, why is he not getting quantum physics or here are algebra problems involving the quadratic equation? Like, seems not fair.
He seems to be comfortable with every category. There was one yesterday, I'm trying to remember what it was, that he seemed like he was resigned to not getting any of the questions right. He wasn't buzzing in. But almost everything else, you name it, he gets it. And it, I think in the final Jeopardy, he's like, you know, what, 31 of 32 or something?
Yeah, it's obnoxious.
His correct answer rate is an all-time high. It's at like 97%. He just doesn't miss.
Which is, hey, there's nothing short of impressive. So congratulations to James, Jeopardy James.
Speaking of that sort of game show trivia, test your knowledge, did you hear what happened in the spelling bee?
Here, okay, the questions. In 1986, this Dodger lefty from Mexico led the NL with a now mind-boggling 20 complete games. All right, we got Fernando.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a minute and answer through these. The 800 in 1970, Dodgers had the longest lasting intact this group. Garvey, Lopes, Russell, Say. We already talked about that. That's the infield.
That's called the infield.
What is the infield? Then we'll move on to the next one. This is the $600 one. It's time for Dodger baseball. This Dodger co-owner knows how to lend a hand. Playing across town, led the NBA in assists per game 4 times. Who is Magic?
Right.
Irvin, Buck, depending on which nicknames. He's playing against a guy named Jim Bob too.
Right.
Longtime Dodger catcher Mike Socha drove to Orange County to become this team's longtime manager.
That's right.
What are the LA Angels?
I was trying to figure out, all right, how do you actually answer that? Because what do you call the Angels?
What are the Angels?
They've had so many different names.
Sandy
but
Koufax.
James just said, what are the Angels?
Sandy Koufax won this annual pitching award with 100% of the first place vote in 63, 65, and 66. What is the Cy Young award?
Right.
Peace out. I just ran that category.
Yep.
There's another gesture.
See?
You can guess what that gesture was. It was like for anybody who liked bowling back in the 80s, that was the Pete Weber gesture.
Right. So, exactly. So, the other individuals who ran their categories yesterday were these young spellers.
Oh, dude, yes.
What an incredible show that was finished after midnight.
And they basically just threw in the towel because, like, all right, we're not going to stump these kids anymore. My in-laws are in town, and my mother-in-law was sitting there at the kitchen table reading the story on her phone, and she says, can you believe that this happened? And I said, like, I can't wait until the, quotes, everybody gets a trophy crowd weighs in on this one. Oh, you had 8 kids win the thing, and then somebody just says, hey, person saying everybody gets a trophy, here's one of the last round words. Spell it.
Yeah, exactly. Here they are. Like, you ready? Ocelot.
Ocelot, like the animal?
No.
O-C-E-L-O-T? No.
No. I think it was something about a syllable, the last syllable, something like that.
Okay, sure.
Erysipelas. Bougainvillea.
Bougainvillea, that's a flower.
That one I maybe would have had a shot.
B-O-U-G-A-N-V-I-L-L-E-A. G-A-I-N.
Yes. Yes, you got that. And there are actually some alternate spellings on that one.
I almost actually cursed.
Aiguillette.
Nope.
Pendulock.
Nope.
The kid who got that one was really entertaining. He was up there with a leather jacket. He answered a lot more.
And Teto Kumpo.
Oh, yeah. We did that last week.
I know, he answered
a lot more quickly than his competitors. So he was entertaining. Palama.
Okay.
This is the only one where the participant seemed to be guessing with the last 3 letters. He was A-M-A. And he looked there. He sort of looked like he was hoping. And in fact, he'd gotten it right. Then Cernuous and Odilic.
Odilic.
So those were the final words that the 8 participants answered correctly to confirm that 8-way tie for the championship, because as you pointed out, basically the spelling bee organizers were running out of questions, running out of words to use.
Right.
So they said, they threw their hands up and said, if you guys keep getting these right, we're just going to call it a tie. And sure enough, three rounds, these eight participants kept getting them right. So they called it an eight-way tie because these kids had been answering questions all day long perfectly.
Right. And you run out of obscure words that you can find. If Jeopardy is sportish, Spelling Bee is sportish, and it's on ESPN, so that makes it sportish too.
Right.
But it's the E, not the S, or the SP. But when you think about the preparation that goes into this, and I still have like occasional tics about being, I think I was in eighth grade, and they had us do a test in school, and it's not anything I've ever worked at. Spelling to me is one of those things that either you are or you aren't. And I've always been a really good speller.
Right.
So they give us this test in school. If I was smart, truly smart, like my fourth grader, I would have missed questions on purpose. So I didn't have to deal with this. Instead, I answered everything right. And they said, oh, cool. Now you get to go to the Orange County Spelling Bee. And they gave us this book and said, here's the words. And my poor mother decided, oh, no, like, hey, let's get you ready for the spelling bee. And I was not having it at all. Like, I was just, peace out, I'm done. And so they had a written part of the spelling thing. I made it through the written part. And then they had like 50 kids left. And I think I missed the first or second word up on the podium and I got to go home.
Okay.
Yeah. But like last night, my mother-in-law is reading the comments section on the website that she's on, which the comments section is always a very dangerous place to go, speaking of the internet. And really, somebody threw out something funny. It was like, why not give them just wheel out a pallet of Monster Energy and a case of Skittles and just let the kids keep going.
Right.
We're not leaving here until this thing's done. We're going back to the first page of the dictionary. Kids, like, if somebody's going to misspell sidewalk or cat.
Right. So when you got that book,
yeah,
did it have every word that could potentially be asked?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it was, I don't know. It was, I don't like, it was like a
thick, somewhat thick book?
No, it was maybe like 100 pages of like words in a little tiny agate type.
Was it just to prepare you in general? Like these are potential words?
These are potential words.
These are the only words that can be asked?
I think. I don't remember. Like okay. I blocked that portion out.
All right.
But, and I really, like I wanted no part of doing that. Like,
well, these kids, they look at their training a little bit differently than you did.
Absolutely.
Because they get spelling coaches.
And they get money.
Each of those eight individuals got a $50,000
I know.
Prize.
Right. That's, seriously. And like
that's outstanding.
They're reasonably young kids. And if they invested appropriately, like now you're talking about money that can maybe buy your books in college or buy you a couple sodas at the cafeteria with
yeah,
the price of college these days. Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah, 13 and 14-year-olds, they've got a couple of years
right,
for that
exactly.
money to grow.
Just, you know, give it to Jeopardy James and allow him to gamble it for you.
Right.
And maybe
sure
then you're on something.
Soon enough, it'll be $250,000.
Yeah, it could be. You never know. And even that might just pay for a year of college.
Right.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I'm not scared or anything. So NBA Finals, which we haven't talked about yet. I was surprised but not surprised to see the Raptors pick up a win in game one.
Yeah, they really took advantage of home court and got off to the start that they needed against the defending champs. Two words on this one, Pascal
Siakam.
Wow. Well,
what
a performance.
When you go back and look at his life story, he was 15 years old and went to a camp that was run in Cameroon by Luke Bamute, who like played in the NBA and played at UCLA, but now goes back and runs camps out there and found this absolute diamond in the rough, Pascal Siakam, who then went to New Mexico State, got drafted 27th overall after his sophomore year as an Aggie. And is, by all accounts, as hard of a worker and about as determined as you'll find in the NBA. And there has been a lot of talk this year leading up to this about him being a really strong candidate as most improved player in the NBA. And I thought all along this year, there's no doubt, like, this is the guy who he went from being sort of fringy to really being an impact player. And at the right time, too, when Kawhi Leonard emerges on the roster.
Yeah, he's a perfect complement to Kawhi. Very similar, actually. And I think he's the Kawhi of the future. But I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing it, just because I had the chance to see him play in the G League up in Maine for against the Portland, against the Maine Red Claws. I was out there with my brother-in-law and nephew a few years back. And, of course, all those seats in the G League games are right up by the court.
Yeah.
So you get a nice close view, and you could see what an athlete he is. He's got great height, length,
speed. He's rangy.
Oh, he's got a huge wingspan, big hands. Again, a lot like Kawhi. But I saw him that day, and he really jumped out like, wow, this guy is a prospect. What is he doing in the G League? And the one thing that it seemed like he didn't have mastered at that point, like he does now, is his shooting form. And Nick Nurse talked about it yesterday after the game, the coach of Toronto. He said, you know, what was the big change for Pascal? When did this happen? And Coach Nurse said it was after a couple years ago when they lost in the playoffs. The next day, Pascal's in the gym saying, you know, I realized I got to improve my shooting. You know, he's seeing all these other players knock down threes and saying he realized this is the one part of my game that's lacking. And so he went into the gym the day after they lose in the playoffs and starts working on his shooting form. And now all of a sudden, here he is playing at an all-star level, and he had the best game of anybody on the court last night.
He was really a standout player. And kids, this one's for you. I know it's tempting after you're done with a game to sit there and think about everything you've done well, but look at this guy. This guy, NBA player, had a decent year a couple years ago, 4.2 a game, 7.3 a game. This year he's vaulted to 16.9 a game, but not even with that. Free throw shooting's gone up to 78%. Three-point shooting from 14 to 22 to 37%.
There you go.
Like, across the board, he has improved on not the things that are natural talents. He's improved on the things that you work at. Like, the best thing to do for any athlete at any level isn't work on the things that you're great at. It's to work on the areas that you can improve and find out what's going to take you to the next echelon the fastest. And if you can figure that stuff out, you'll go a long way in your career. And he's exhibit A of, I got to work on this. And he went out and worked on it. And then he dropped 32 on the Dubs in the opener of the NBA Finals. And I'm not a bandwagon guy. I love the Warriors. Obviously, we've talked about Draymond. He is one of my favorites to watch when he's rolling. Love watching Klay shoot, and Steph is second to none. But it would be kind of fun to watch these guys win the whole thing.
It would. I mean, there's a lot to like about him. They're all great defenders, and they really picked up their shooting. You know, in the last series, Kawhi really carried them. And obviously Van Vliet came off the bench and shot lights out. But some of these other guys like Gasol and actually Siakam had a couple games there where they really didn't do that much. And so you had to wonder coming into the finals, how are these guys going to react? But early on, you could see Siakam and Gasol. Gasol hit those early threes and they were off and running. And it was interesting to see the defensive strategy from Golden State. They really tried to take Kawhi out of it. They doubled him almost all night and made it really tough on him, you know, tried to prompt him to distribute the ball, and they didn't want Kawhi to beat them. He only took four shots in the first quarter. It took a long time for really him to find any sort of an opening offensively. But meanwhile, the other guys were taking advantage of, you know, because they left Gasol wide open for threes in the first quarter, and he was knocking them down. Danny Green, you know, he had a terrible shooting series, but you knew that he was due, and sure enough, he went 3-for-7 from three-point land. And then Siakam was just great all day, all night at both ends. So, you know, they've really, and you never know, maybe it was that home court advantage, but those Raptors, other than Kawhi, really stepped up, and they've really got to be, they've got to have Golden State thinking now, wow, how are we going to solve this riddle? We don't have Durant. Cousins is back, but he's not 100%. Iguodala, it looks like he tweaked his injury again last night. So things are not looking very rosy for the Warriors right now.
It'll be fun to watch how all this plays out. So I'm certainly hoping for a 7-game series out of it. And speaking of going the full distance, Harry's going to kill us because we're about 2.5 minutes over. So without further ado, want to thank Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, and Colleen Richardson. Thanks to my co-host, broadcast partner, Andrew Hansen. And thanks to you for listening to us for an hour plus with no breaks. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Have a great sports week.